Hello and welcome to Vikings Territory Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Oberle, senior writer at VikingsTerritory.com and PurplePTSD.com. With me is my co-host Mark Craig, NFL insider and Vikings writer at the Star Tribune and StarTribune.com. We want to welcome back a friend of the podcast, friend of ours, former Vikings GM, Jeff Diamond. Jeff, how you doing? Thanks for coming back. Great to see you.
Great, Joe and Mark. How you guys doing?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Fine. Just got back. I was down in Texas last week speaking at Texas Tech, home of Patrick Mahomes.
There you go.
And the Vikings hope they can find a Patrick Mahomes in this draft. That may be a tough task. We'll see.
No kidding. Well, for people that don't know, I just want to do a little intro of Jeffy. Former Vikings GM, former Titans GM. Jeff works for a 33rd team website, flies around the country, like he's saying, speaking, recruits players for the IFA group headed by Blake Barrett, and which represents Adam Thielen and CJ Ham, and he writes for Vikings Territory. Jeff, it's great to have you this time. We wanted to have you back right before the draft just to give us a little insight. And I'm just curious if you can maybe paint a picture for us, like what's going on out at TCO right now? I mean, what are those guys, Kwesi and them, doing? Do they have their decision made? Are they still making calls? What's happening there, do you think?
Well, they have their decision made of what they'd like to do, yeah, but not necessarily what's going to happen. And it's kind of a nerve-wracking time right before the draft, a couple of days before the draft, when you're thinking about all the possible scenarios and you're seeing all these crazy mock drafts, and you know that's not the reality of what's going to happen. But you're also doing your own mock drafts at this point in time because the grades are in. You've already worked with your scouts and your coaches, and you got your grades, you got your board set up. And so at this stage of the game, basically 24 or 48 hours before the draft, what teams are doing is they're kind of cross-checking some medical perhaps on some players. They're also kind of talking to some contacts around the league, but they're kind of feeling out the trade possibilities, which they've been doing really since the combine. But it gets a little more serious at this point in time that, hey, if our guy's here, we'd like to move up. And so forth. And are you interested? And so, yeah, they're definitely having conversations with the Cardinals at number 4, the Chargers at number 5, perhaps the Patriots at number 3, about what could happen and what quarterbacks may or may not be gone by that point in time. But I think the other thing that happens at this point is, besides all the calls with other teams, teams are also kind of setting up their own mock drafts. And we always mock the mock drafts, but teams do their own mock drafts because they want to have an idea of what other teams are thinking, what they think that other teams' needs are, and which is also one of the big changes that I've seen in whatever 30-some years following the draft and being involved in drafts and then covering the drafts and working for our agent firm, is really the old cliche about taking the best player available. I think it was much more prevalent in the past than it is today. And today I think there's much more picking for need because these GMs and coaches are concerned about their jobs and owners don't have as much patience with them. And so they figure, I got to address needs in the draft compared to taking that best player available. Now, I think the smartest franchises still take that approach, but there's so much more drafting for need today. And I think that's where teams such as the Vikings, as they enter this draft, and obviously in need of a quarterback, because I just don't see them wanting to hitch their wagon to Sam Darnold necessarily. Mm-hmm. And so from that standpoint, they definitely want to get up into that top, I believe, into that top 4, so that a team such as Denver can't jump them. And I think that's going to be the strategy going in. But again, they don't want to overpay. They understand they're probably going to have to give up those 2 first-round picks at 11 and 23 and perhaps maybe a third or fourth rounder next year. I think that's a price that they would probably pay if they like May or McCarthy that much, which I would think they probably do. And I think another thing that really enters into the equation, guys, is for a team that needs a quarterback, you're also looking at the future, and you're looking at next year's draft, which is not nearly as quarterback talented as this year's draft, seemingly on the surface. And you also look at free agency, and the top quarterbacks rarely, if ever, get to free agency. Kirk Cousins was the premier free agent quarterback this year, and he's barely a top 10 quarterback in the league. Very good player, but he's not Mahomes. He's not Burrow. He's not those kind of guys, Lamar Jackson. And so if you've got a shot at getting one of these top guys, I think you have to take a run at it. But it's a scary proposition, guys, and I think you need to look no further than the 2021 draft, and which I'll be writing about in Vikings territory this week. You need to look no further than the 2021 draft to know how scary a proposition is to draft a quarterback high in the first round. Mm-hmm. And you look at Zach Wilson, the most recent casualty being traded from the Jets after a washout career there, basically, number two overall pick. The only one out of those five first-round quarterbacks still with their original team is Trevor Lawrence, the number one pick in Jacksonville. Zach Wilson is now in Denver. Trey Lance at number three by San Francisco. He's now in Dallas. Justin Fields, who I think was still a pretty good quarterback, but not great, and he was picked number 11 by the Bears, and now he's in Pittsburgh. And then you look at Mac Jones, who had a good first year in New England and then went in the tank after that, and now he's down in Jacksonville. So it's a little bit of a risky deal. Historically, it tells you if there are a bunch of quarterbacks in the first round, half of them are going to be busts. And so the bottom line is you better pick the right one.
Yeah,
I think that's what Kwesi and Kevin are thinking about today. They've spent all this time identifying who is the right guy for them. Is it Drake May? Is it J.J. McCarthy? I'm sure that maybe they'd love it to be Jaden Daniels, but he's probably not going to be there. So, and then maybe it's going to be a semi-surprise. Maybe it's Penix or Nix. We'll see.
Is it important to – I mean, you don't see a lot of teams locking in their trades if they're trading up before the draft. It's so much dependent on what happens right in front of them, right? And all those trades are consummated right in those 15 minutes when you're on the clock. Is that usually what's going on?
Yeah, I think now isn't it 12 minutes?
12, geez.
In the first round, but
thank goodness.
Yeah, exactly. And I think they lowered the other rounds, which is great. But it might even be 10 minutes. I'm not sure, but in that first round. But yeah, I think that's definitely what's happening, is that usually you're making these moves when a team's on the clock and you see that a player's there that you covet and so forth. But I think certainly the telltale sign of the Vikings wanting to move very high in this draft was when they made that trade with Houston for the 23rd pick, and to have those two first-round picks. And, yeah, it sounds great to have two first-round picks, and they could draft a corner and an edge rusher or an interior offensive lineman with one of those two picks. But when you need a quarterback game in the modern NFL, it's the passing league. And so I think when they made that trade with Houston, that told everybody that they want to move up into the top five or really top four to make sure that a team such as Denver or the Raiders or the Giants don't jump them. But I think the Giants, for example, there's a lot of smoke out there this time of year. I think the Giants, the talk of them moving up, I think that's a lot of smoke. We'll see. But I think Daniel Jones was a pretty good quarterback in 2022. He beat the Vikings in a playoff game, had a really good year that year. Then he gets hurt last year, and all of a sudden he's a bum.
Yeah.
I'm not quite buying that. I still think Daniel Jones is a pretty good player if he has better supporting cast at wide receiver. And now he's got no Saquon Barkley. But I think the Giants, that may be a lot of smoke about them moving up.
You know,
what do you – you know, just I guess, first of all, we'll cut to the chase. We, you know, as if my expertise of the draft wasn't enough, Joe had to go out and get a former executive of the year in the league, you know. So we'll bow to you. Tell us what they're going to do, and talk about the impatience of if you do take a quarterback, how quickly he has to develop and be successful, and what's going to happen to these guys if they miss on this.
Yeah, well, I think it's potentially fatal if they miss on this pick. It's just really such a critical pick in terms of if they go quarterback. And so, as we said, maybe they think we love Bo Nix or we love Michael Penix Jr. and they sit at 11 and take one of those guys, or they take one of those guys at 23, take a top corner, Terrion Arnold or whoever that may be at 11. If that's how they feel, how they've rated them, then so be it. And then that could be the best case scenario for them. I don't think that's what they're doing, because I don't think they make that trade with Houston if they don't want to jump into the top five or four. And I think they're looking clearly at Arizona at number four. I think the Cardinals are kind of in the catbird seat in this draft. If you figure that quarterbacks are going to go 1, 2, 3, and then there's going to be either May or McCarthy at four. And so the Cardinals are certainly trying to squeeze teams at this point in time. But at some point, they're going to say, okay, we're going to move back. And would I – it's obviously a guess at this point, but I could see the Cardinals and the Vikings making that trade, as I said, for number 11, number 23, and maybe a fourth rounder next year. Vikings move up to number four, take Mayer McCarthy. The Cardinals move down to 11 and then maybe try to trade back up to number 6 or 7 and then take one of those receivers. If Harrison Jr. is gone, they can go after Neighbors. They can go after Adunze. And those guys are still really, really talented players. And then the Cardinals pick up extra picks that they need to help build their roster. So if I'm going to forecast it, that's what I'm going to guess. But that probably won't happen, as we know. Not, in the draft, things don't usually unfold as you think they will. And so, which makes all the mock drafts just kind of crazy. If anybody did a mock draft and ever hit on maybe 70% of the picks or 50% of the picks to the right team, that would be amazing.
It would be. Jeff, you mentioned that, you know, what they might have to pay to trade up to four. If they were trying to go up to three with New England, the talk has all been the two first round draft picks this year and another one next year, and then maybe even some change. Do you think A, that's a logistic, and B, do you isn't that too much? Isn't that a lot to pay for one player?
I think that's too much. Yeah, I think that is too rich to move up that high, and I think even teams that have spent that kind of draft capital on veteran quarterbacks, such as Denver with Russell Wilson, have lived to regret it. And so, or back in my early years as an assistant GM, when we sold the farm for Herschel Walker, which fortunately I had nothing to do with that. Or I wouldn't be talking.
That allowed you to talk about it because you didn't have anything to do with it, right?
I had nothing to do with that. No, I was there when Mike Wood made the trade, and he told me, well, we're trading five players for Herschel Walker. And I was at that league meeting in Dallas when he was talking to Jerry Jones and Jimmy Johnson about that trade. And Mike comes back in the room, and that was the meeting where Paul Tagliabue was elected commissioner. And I'm sitting there casting our vote while he's making this trade. He comes back and says, yeah, I traded five players for Herschel Walker. They're all guys we can afford to let go. Well, he didn't tell me about all the first and second round picks that were tied to those players if the Cowboys didn't keep those players. And I love Mike. He was a great mentor for me in a lot of ways, but that was not obviously the shining hour for the franchise.
Is anybody telling him, say, no, Mike, no, don't do that. That's too much.
It was too late by the time he told me on the plane home what the real trade was.
God, look at the league nowadays. That many players for a running back. How about that?
That would never happen today. Probably not even one first round pick for a running back, right? The way running backs have been devalued in the league. So it's just kind of crazy how things have changed.
I did an anniversary story on that. I had no trouble getting Jimmy and and Jerry on the phone for that. And Mike, to his credit, was talked about it at that point, whatever year it was. It's amazing how he, you know, for lack of a better word, just got the wool pulled over his eyes. And I'm sure that helped you going forward to know what things not to do.
Yeah, exactly. As I said, I learned a lot of good and not so good. And in terms of trades, it was always the old, we're one player away from a Super Bowl. And that's what Mike was thinking when he made that deal, because we were a playoff team for several years. We couldn't get over the hump of the 49ers, and he thought that would make a difference. Well, the problem was, obviously, historically, Herschel was just not a great fit for Jerry Burns' offense at that time. So it's just, yeah, you learn positive and negative in your experiences along the way.
And Jeff,
go ahead.
People talk about going up to three, and I just, that does not make any sense to me at all. I mean, perhaps the best coach in the history of football was fired because he didn't have a quarterback. How do you start a new regime in New England? And I understand you may like one guy above the others, but to have the third pick in your first year starting a new regime, knowing what happened to that franchise because they lost a quarterback, how do you get them to, you know, to not take a swing there? And it'd be crazy for them not to take a quarterback there, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mark. I think the only thing that may enter into it is you've got a new GM in Elliott Wolf. You've got a new head coach in New England. And so they may figure, well, we've got the latitude of 3 or 4 years to build this thing. And mm-hmm. if we can build up around this quarterback and Jacoby Brissett can get us going initially, maybe we take one of these other quarterbacks later. But I agree with you. If this draft is as quarterback rich as we believe, then you've got to take a shot at one of those guys, and which is probably going to be Mayor McCarthy at number three. So I really don't expect New England to move out of that spot. I think they'll take the quarterback, and I think the draft really starts at the intrigue starts at number four with Arizona.
So my sense of Kwesi so far is watching what he did with Kirk, he kind of had a number or a contract idea he wanted for Kirk. Kirk didn't want to do that. He says, okay, see ya. My sense is he's the same way here. He's not going to want to spend too much. And you got to find a partner to make that deal with. If he doesn't find a partner to trade up to number 3, 4, or 5, and they end up holding their picks, what do you think the Vikings do then? How do they handle 11 and 23 the rest of the first round?
I think they'll look at an edge rusher. I think they'll look at a corner. 11 is a little rich for a guard. They need a guard still.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's Dalton Reisner, but I would think that they want to re-sign him. He's not a great player, but he's a good enough player. And they gave Blake Brandel $9.5 million over 3 years, which is almost starter money. And if they think Brandel's going to be their starter at left guard and Ed Ingram at right guard with Bradbury at center, I think that's a little shaky on the interior. And including Bradbury as a former first round pick, who I'm not sure he's ever really panned out as a really top starter in this league worthy of a number one pick. And so he can be a decent player until he gets matched up against a big, big defensive tackle who overpowers him. And so, yeah, I would think that they'll look at that edge rusher spot. They signed obviously Grenard and Van Ginkel, but I think they'll be looking at juicing that up more for the rotation. And corner is still, I think, a very big need for this team. The young guys just have been a little too shaky. We know that Caleb Evans has had his struggles. We know that Andrew Booth Jr. is a near bust as a number two. And Mekhi Blackmon, I saw some good things early in the year and maybe not quite so good late in the year from him. They signed Shaquille Griffin. He could be okay as a starter. But I still think they need a more of a premier corner. And so if they don't make the move for the quarterback, I think corner could be the spot. that they take someone like a Terrion Arnold or somebody like that, one of those top corners in this draft, and then kind of go from there. And maybe at 23 could get an edge rusher. Maybe it's first, maybe it's one of these other guys. There's a pretty good crop of edge rushers in the league or in the draft, but I'll be surprised if they don't move up and take a quarterback.
If they don't, you don't see them grabbing Nix or Penix at 11 or 23 then if they're
sitting? I think it could happen. That could definitely happen if they rate them high enough, because they don't have a second round pick. They don't have a third round pick. Right. And so, yeah, you can trade next year's whatever second and third for a second to try to get into the upper second round and take one of those guys. So, yeah, certainly they could jump on one of those guys at 23 or 11 if they think that strongly of them. But I still think they're looking to get in the top four.
Jeff, you put yourself in the chair in Arizona. And take this with a grain of salt because my mock drafts take about 10 minutes per pick. Mine take about 20 minutes to be blown apart. But when I look at Arizona, I feel like the number five is where they would trade up to, because Arizona has like 11 picks. I think that's more than anybody. They have three of the top 65, I think, or something like that. Two in the first round. If you're sitting there as a GM, how many more picks do you need whenever you have the best non quarterback on the board of your choice, and you have a quarterback that you're what, 50 some million cap number? And you're trying to make him get the best value out of him by putting people around him. Why trade out of that for more picks when you've got a ton of picks already?
Yeah, well, and certainly if they value Marvin Harrison Jr. that high or Malik Nabers, then they'll sit there and take those guys because, as you said, they have another first-round pick. They have a bunch of other picks in this draft. But, again, doesn't sound bad to have three first round picks either. when you're a last place team in a division with a pretty good bunch of teams that you're facing. So they could definitely figure, yeah, we're going to go that direction and try to build up this roster. So if they perceive that's the value and they can go down and still get one of those top receivers and in a receiver rich draft, and who knows, it could be another receiver that they think is still really good and worth it, picking at whatever, 11 or 23. And so, there, as I said, there are plenty of really good players in this draft that you could jump on, and maybe they'll take that approach. But yeah, in some respects, I could see them sitting tight and taking Harrison Jr. But if the right offer's there, then I think they'll be on the move.
Another thing, wrinkle that could affect what the Vikings do is this whole tampering situation with Atlanta over the Kirk Cousins deal. What do you think of that? I mean, there's a lot of reports out now. Adam Schefter said that something was going to happen. Nobody knows specifically. They said the investigation is done. What do you think of this? What do you know about these things happening in the past? Do you think the Vikings will get anything out of this? And just what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I don't think that they're going to swap number 8 and 11 for the Vikings.
God, I was hoping for that.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. What I could see possibly happening is maybe I think Atlanta's got two third rounders, like number 71 and 75, and maybe they flip number 75 to the Vikings or something like that. And because the Vikings don't have a third rounder, the equitable thing, if the Vikings were the team that were damaged, and that's kind of questionable too, how bad they wanted to keep Kirk in the first place.
Hmm.
But if the league says, well, the Vikings were the team that was damaged, then Atlanta's going to have to pay the Vikings. I think in that situation, it's more equitable to give the damaged team a pick rather than just forcing Atlanta to forfeit a pick.
Wouldn't that be free money for the Vikings? Because I think we all know once they got to that Monday, the Vikings had already washed their hands of him. I think, you know, If a deal wasn't done with him, I think, wasn't that kind of the feeling? I mean, and also, what would your thoughts be on, I've always thought, and we, Joe and I have talked about this, that rule is ridiculous when only the agent can talk to him. And, you know, it seems like once you get to that point, you know, when you have those two or three days there, you know, you should be able to talk, the player should be able to talk to him. I mean, if that's your legal tampering period, why not expand it to the player or the agent? You know, it seems like such a ridiculous rule for me.
Well, yeah, the whole thing's ridiculous because there's rampant tampering at the combine. We know that. And so it's just, the whole thing's kind of ridiculous. And to categorize it as a legal tampering period, just start free agency on Monday, forget it.
I mean, yeah.
What the heck? And so, yeah. But I think the league still likes to kind of enforce their rules and make examples of teams that blatantly step out in front of it and kind of blatant when this trainer is talking to Kirk and whoever else was talking to Kirk at that time. So I think it's obvious that they're going to be punished, and to what severity we'll find out, and whether the Vikings benefit or not. That'll be very interesting to see. I think the last time this happened was the teams made a deal on their own to swap third round picks, for example, when that happened, as opposed to in the past when the whoever it was, Miami was punished for tampering with Brady and actually had to forfeit a pick. So yeah, be another little sidebar, interesting story with this in the next couple 48 hours or so to see what happens there. Absolutely. And if the Vikings do pick up any kind of benefit from this.
Would be nice. Jeff, you wrote a story for Vikings territory recently about urging fans not to be worried about a no-show of Justin Jefferson at the voluntary workouts they had. Can you talk a little bit about that and why you think that we shouldn't be panicked, or he's not going to do a hold out or a hold in or expect to be given half the team's, you know, to become an owner of the team? I'm just kidding.
I think that first of all, it's the same thing Justin did last year, and he didn't show up for the voluntary portion and ended up coming to the mandatory mini camp and reported on time to training camp. And I remember talking, Mark and I talked, and I said, I was surprised that he actually participated in the mini camp and running routes and doing everything. And even in training camp and not doing the hold in that other players such as TJ Hockenson, wink, wink, did last year, or Nick Bosa and some of these other players. So I think the difference is this year, Justin's getting paid. He's making $19.74 million a year this year. So it's not like he's still underpaid. He's getting paid a good sum this year to show up. And so I don't know that he wants to be fined whatever the 50 grand a day if you don't show up now, compared to what the old days were. It's pretty severe. And he's got a good relationship with O'Connell. We know that. But certainly I could see him doing a hold in a little bit, maybe in mini camp or in training camp this year with so much at stake, because you're talking about probably 170 to 175 million on an extension over five more years, and which the guarantee will probably be close to $100 million. That's some pretty significant money to be risking having an injury. And he did get hurt last year, the first big injury in his career. Now, it was a hamstring that he recovered from, we saw, but there have been plenty of examples of players getting hurt in mini camp and certainly in training camp. So I could see him doing a hold-in, but to fret about it at this point in time for Viking fans, there's no reason to worry about it. I still believe that they'll get the deal done by training camp, and it could happen even sooner, because once they do that contract, they can pick up probably $10 million of cap room that will help them when, under cap rules, you go from the top 51 players counting at this time of year to after the final roster, every player counts. So they're going to need more cap room to sign draft choices, to do other things. And I think they should parlay some extra cap room and go out and sign, hey, how about Stephon Gilmore from Dallas? How about Xavier Howard from Miami? These guys are still out there as free agents. And how good would one of those guys look in the Vikings starting lineup at corner compared? And then you've got Shaquille Griffin could be your third guy along with Byron Murphy. And then you continue to develop a Caleb Evans and Andrew Booth Jr. I don't see a great future for him, but Mekhi Blackmon, yes. And maybe they draft another corner in one of those fourth round picks. They got extra fourths, extra fifths, and you take a shot. The one thing I always said, guys, when we went into draft rooms with teams I was involved with, I always said there are great players in every round of the draft, and including undrafted players. There are going to be Pro Bowl players in every round of the draft, whether it's an Adam Thielen went undrafted. I signed John Randall for $5,000 as an undrafted free agent in 1990. He ends up in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So those things happen. Tom Brady in the sixth round, yeah. Russell Wilson in the third round, Joe Montana, on and on and on. And, yeah, we get all hung up on these first-round picks. But sometimes those first-round picks – and I'll tell you, a guy that kind of scares me a little bit is Caleb Williams from the standpoint that – he's got a lot of ego. He's got he has some shaky performances on occasion against really good teams. He threw three interceptions against Notre Dame last year. Now he had some really good games too, obviously, and had a really almost a better junior season. But he's not a big kind of running threat that Jaden Daniels is, and Caleb Williams. Maybe he'll be great. But maybe not. We'll see.
I agree with that one.
Yeah. So you're basically confirming that the draft is a crapshoot, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah. And he's going to Chicago. You know Chicago's member. They can't get it right. So, Jeff, just to be clear, Jeff, did Randall, did not do Herschel. We want to get that
clear. Thank you, Mark.
But, Jeff, going back to Justin Jefferson, what do you think the holdup is, number one? And number two, is it harder to make him the highest paid non-quarterback, go past the Bosa deal a year after he's missed seven games, as opposed to it was a no-brainer when he was unanimous AP offensive player of the year? Do you still give him that because that's what he wants, right? And if you think anything less than that, he's not going to want to do. Is that the holdup?
Yeah, well, I think that certainly he wants to be the highest paid non-quarterback. He wants to get over Bosa's $34 million a year extension. And I think he will get that deal. And maybe the way the Vikings can protect themselves is to put some active roster bonuses into the deal that won't be count against the cap because he only played 10 games last year. And so they can kind of structure a deal maybe with some play time for the high percentages, 80-90%, to max out the contract and put significant money as far as maybe it's not significant on a $34 million a year contract if you've got $1 million in incentives. But I think it's kind of part of what I think their mindset is, that they want to have some protection for the team but again, he came back from it. He played great at the end of the year, even after the injury, and had no missed time really in his first three seasons. So, but anybody who says the Vikings are going to trade Justin Jefferson, I think that's crazy. You don't trade the best player in the league at a position when you've got that, unless someone's making you an unbelievable three first round picks or something offer. They're not going to trade Justin Jefferson. But compared to, I think, some of the players that could be traded in this draft, and I think there are going to be some really significant players that could be moved in that first couple rounds on Thursday and Friday. And as I've talked about, guys like Alvin Kamara, Buda Baker, Brandon Ayuk, there could be even a T. Higgins. There's some really good players that could be traded in this draft when teams have cap issues. And one of the teams – that I've written about that the Vikings need to be wary of is the Broncos in regard to Patrick Surtain and the fact that because of the Russell Wilson and all that dead money on his contract, $85 million, and Surtain's supposed to be a $20 million a year player next year in 2025, maybe Sean Payton figures we'll throw Surtain into the deal to move up to number four, and then the Cardinals say, whoa.
That would not be good. Just one more. I saw Kwesi in his presser last week. He always seems so calm. He always seems calmed and measured and just not to pan. But this is kind of his Super Bowl right now. Do you think he's feeling is the heat turning up on him after his first two drafts or to really do well this week?
Oh, yeah, it definitely is. And, yeah, he doesn't show it. He's a pretty good poker player. But I know he's feeling the pressure and I think Kevin O'Connell too, that they're going into their third season. First season was great. Second season, not so great. And now they're at a point where they need to get the thing back on track towards a playoff team and towards being competitive in a very difficult division where you've got the Lions, the Packers and the Bears on the upswing. And so it's certainly a big challenge, but I still believe if Cousins hadn't gotten hurt last year, that they would have been a playoff team. They only needed a couple more wins to do it, and he would have got that done. And so, yeah, I think he's definitely feeling the pressure, and the pressure is extra when you're looking at having to draft a quarterback and thinking about the history of drafting quarterbacks in the first round, and that half the guys usually – either are busted or they're traded to another team. So yeah, there's definitely pressure that he's feeling, but yeah, he doesn't really show it, which is good.
Yeah. Do you think that GMs today, like Kwesi, who is very aggressive with his trading draft picks, do you think they're more aggressive nowadays than you were in your day in that seat?
Yeah, I think there is a little bit more of an aggressive approach from GMs today in terms of trading up or down in the draft. And I never liked trading down in the draft. And I remember one year we traded our first round pick for a couple of seconds and none of the seconds ended up panning out.
Wow.
And I after that, never wanted to trade out of the first round. We did one year in Tennessee when we traded our first round pick for Kevin Carter, who was a Pro Bowl defensive end at the Rams. And that's a different approach because you have a known quantity there when you're trading for a player.
Yeah.
Who's an extra player. But yeah, I think that it's a little bit of a risky type deal, especially to trade down, but even to trade up if you're losing your draft capital too. And so, but I still think it's something that they're going to try to do.
Well, we've taken a lot of your time. We sure appreciate it today. Can you tell us where folks checking this out can find you online or where your stuff?
Yeah, sure. Vikings Territory.
They know that.
And the33rdteam.com.
Okay.
Where I'm going to be my draft night's responsibility. I'm going to be analyzing and grading trades. So that's going to be what I'm going to be doing on Thursday and Friday nights, which I think will be kind of a fun deal. I wrote last week about the players I think could be traded in this draft and the several of those I already mentioned. And so I enjoy my writing for them. I do my podcast on talknorth.com and love my involvement with Vikings Territory. So that's where they can find me, and or you can find me at the IFA office. And we do have a bunch of guys in this draft, and so we're hoping some of our guys get picked fairly early.
Nice.
And we'll see how that shakes out. We've got a good running back from Tennessee, Jalen Wright, who I think is going to be a guy that could be a second or third round pick. A lot of speed that he brings as a running back and kind of a receiver out of the backfield. So we'll be anxious to see how he does in our other players.
Or you could see him walking very slowly from Inverwood's 13th green up to the 14th tee tomorrow as we make our way first time back nine tomorrow.
Oh, boy. I hope someone has a cart that we can hitch onto.
It gets harder every year.
Because we're walkers. We love to walk.
Right. I took that walk and it almost ended me, so I don't recommend it for anybody. But Jeff, thanks so much. I sure appreciate you being here. It's a great preview for the draft for us, and everybody go check him out. You can find him even on Twitter and everything else. So thank you, Jeff.
Hey, thanks, guys. Take care and have a great rest of draft week. And Mark, I'll see you on the first tee tomorrow.
All right, we'll see you.
Great. Thanks, guys.
All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more from Vikings Territory Breakdown. Okay, folks, welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown. With just all we got is Mark Craig now. Jeff Diamond's gone. So, I mean, you know, I'm hope you're still with us, fan. Oh, I'm kidding. Mark, Jeff had a lot of great stuff to say. I mean, some of the things that, you know, fans and media people don't even consider. So it was nice having him on. What do you take away from some of the things he talked about in the first segment?
Well, I'll go Bill Tobin on and say, who the hell is Jeff Diamond? Like who the hell is Mel Kiper? That way back in the day. It's fascinating to talk to Jeff because Jeff is he's been there, he's done it. His knowledge of the financials and everything, like we were just talking to off air here about his bringing up the Patrick Surtain with the Broncos. Mm-hmm. That is a trade piece that, you know, when we're doing a lot of people are doing it, amateurs, if you will, we're looking at what their draft capital is, and he's able to look and see, okay, they have this, you know, this all pro type cornerback that, certainly the Cardinals or anybody really would want to have, and they know they're only going to get 1 year because they got $85 million in debt of dead money on Russell Wilson. So you throw him into the mix and suddenly it sort of takes away counters my thought was, man, they got 11 picks. They got two first rounders. They got three in the top 65. They got all the picks they need. Go for the best player available, man, which I think is Marvin Harrison, which I think is the best player in the draft. And because I agree with him, and this could be proven completely wrong. I mean, yeah. Caleb Williams could be a Hall of Famer. When I didn't study him, like the people who study the draft really are paid to do, but I was missing something with him too. And then Jeff, hear Jeff say that it's, and we've talked about it too before, but I guess I have to see it to believe it with Caleb Williams. Cause when I would watch Notre Dame game, the Utah game, I was like, what am I missing here? His personality sort of mixes. I don't do a good sense, but having said that, someone will play this back in 10 years and the guy will be, six-time All-Pro. Who knows?
Well, after listening to Jeff talk about Caleb Williams and yourself, I'm sitting there thinking, man, I hope he doesn't drop to four. I hope the other three guys aren't gone.
That's the thing. It's always possible. Like on the eve of the draft or the morning of the draft, something comes out where you're thinking, because right now I don't think anybody, every mock draft in the world, which is probably a billion mock drafts, has Caleb Williams first. I hope at least he goes first so he can get at least one right.
Yeah, it's funny you talk about, Jeff brought him up too, mock drafts and all that kind of stuff, how the teams do theirs. You did a piece in the Strib this week about mock drafts and the history of it. Curious just why'd you want to do that? And what did you find out that was, interesting? I mean, I've seen a lot of people commenting on it. It was a really good story. And we'll talk about that a little bit.
Well, one reason is because I think I love the history of this league more than I do the modern part of the game. And it's been done. It's not, I didn't unearth any new ground or anything. I talked to a lot of the same people that probably have done it in other stories. But these are guys that I share the Hall of Fame selection committee with, guys who are, as old as I am, as old as you are. These guys are probably in the generation a little bit, maybe one ahead where, they were
thanks
there.
Thanks for including me in your generation.
I was going to say old guys like you, but, it was fascinating. And I took it as a history of the mock draft, but also broadened it out to the draft itself. And talking to a guy like Ron Wolf, a good story in the piece was how the AFL and the NFL, first of all, the draft in 1936 started not because they wanted to create some TV, grand TV experiment. It was to hold player salary down. It was to, you know, instead of like the richest teams going and outbidding people for a good player, they would, you know, put it all in order, and then and you could, you know, force them to take the money or leave. 11 of the first, you know, the Vikings have the 11th pick. Seven of the first 11 picks, I believe, ever drafted didn't play football, including the number one guy overall. He wanted $15,000 from George Halas. George Halas countered with $13,500, take it or leave it. That guy went and worked for a rubber company in Chicago. And in the 60s, when we're talking to Ron Wolf about the AFL-NFL war, they used to, you know, when they just started, like, they would have a podium in New York at Summit Hotel. And Roselle wouldn't really announce the pick until he was sure, you know, somewhat sure that this person would sign with the NFL and not the AFL. Down the street at the Belmont Plaza was another hotel that no one knew about. It was where they had the draft prospects and they had babysitters to watch them. Well, I was talking to Ron Wolf, who was working for Al Davis in Oakland, and he said, we had our own babysitters. There was a guy named a tackle named Harry Shue in 1965. He got done with his last game in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. The draft used to be in November. So Hattiesburg, Mississippi, they pick him, they take him to Las Vegas, and they stash him with the wife of the head coach of the Raiders. But the Detroit Lions, they wanted to draft this guy, so they found him in Las Vegas and were about ready to take him. And Al Davis had someone else fly in and take the guy to Hawaii. And so they hit him long enough so they could draft him and sign him, and then he played in the AFL. So stuff like that's fascinating. And one reason for the merger was, again, to bring play, you know, to get together, because they couldn't afford to, you know, like Joe Namath had an option to play in the NFL or the AFL. He took the AFL and made a crazy $400,000 a year for a football player. Can you believe that? And so they
again, I love golf, for crying out loud. Go ahead.
They got together, they merged, and so they brought bringing salaries down. But the first, and I was talking to Mel Kiper, who it's fascinating that Mel does, he does like media 1 hour where he does all his stuff on TV. He does like all these conference calls with media. And then if you want to call Mel, you give him a call on the phone and he'll talk some more. He, you know, he's like a wind up guy. He just keeps talking. And I said, Mel, you know, somewhere there's got to be the first mock draft, like under glass, like the Constitution, you know, like where's the first one? And to the best of my knowledge, there it started in the 60s. There was a guy, two brothers, they were insurance salesmen from Philadelphia, the Marasco brothers, Pete and drawing a blank on the other. But these brothers talked Pro Football Weekly into taking their, they used to do prospects, you know, and this is pre-internet, so you didn't, you had to get your information the hard way, you know. So they put together in Pro Football Weekly 1969 is at least as old as 1969. So, and then Joel Buxbaum was a guy that was famous. He passed away in 2002. He was a recluse and lived in a Brooklyn apartment. Belichick became one of Bill Belichick's best friends because this guy was so good at working the phones and knowing what was going on. You checked with Joel whenever you went into the draft. Rick Goslin, you know, famous NFL writer. He was telling stories, and his first one was in '86, his first mock draft. He used to be on the phone for 18 hours a day talking to everybody. Had a network of 130 people, and they didn't cross him. They didn't tell him lies because they didn't want to get kicked out of his loop. Hmm. And so, but it was a time where media center would be here. You know, Rick Goslin would walk down the hallway. You know, there'd be Tony Dungy, Herman Edwards. You know, all these assistant coaches watching film of the draft. He'd go in, watch film with them, talk about the draft, go down the hallway. The head coach would be doing, he'd walk in and pour himself a cup of coffee. The league was much more open, less paranoid. So that's was a kind of a nutshell. A lot of great stories. I would say if you haven't read it, it's worth a read if you don't know the history of the NFL.
It is.
Those are great, like for me, nuggets of what the league used to be like compared to what it is now.
You know, that's a great point. I mean, I saying that about the difference between then and now, I wrote George Mikan's autobiography, co-wrote or wrote it for him. And the infancy of that league, the NBA, compared to now, you just would, it's so completely different. You know, I mean, and you brought up babysitters, how they were babysitting those players. That's basically what Sid Hartman did, didn't he, with Mikan when they brought him in to sign him here in, you know, they tried to get George. He was like a free agent. They wanted to get him to Minneapolis. And so Sid got him in town and they tried to negotiate it. He didn't sign it. So Sid's supposed to take him to the airport to catch his plane back to Chicago. And he drives around the 494 loop all over getting lost until the plane was gone. And so then Mikan had to stay overnight and they signed him the next day. So
Yeah. It's fascinating. Whenever another part of the story, I talked to Joe Brown, I've known Joe for a long time. Joe worked in the league for office for 50 years. Got there in 65. He was like a sophomore at a college in New York City and in Brooklyn or Queens or something like that. And he was going for English literature and he got this job, as a gopher for the NFL. And he's just telling a story about how, everyone's sort of, I think a lot of people have heard the story about, when ESPN, which was formed in 1979. If you remember ESPN, when all they had was Australian rules football, you'd sit there and watch Australian rules football. I had no idea what they were doing.
Yeah.
You'd see that when they would score, whatever, they go like this. Yeah. And so they needed programming. So, they're not even a year old. They go to, Chet Simmons, who had come over from somewhere else and was leading, a brilliant person, obviously, that could see down the road of what this could be like. He goes to Pete Rozelle and says, "We'd like to televise your draft." Well, now ESPN pays, I think, $2 billion to the draft, football games and everything, and all things that they do. Well, Joe said Pete was, he thought it was funny. He goes, why would they want to televise me standing at a podium reading a card that was turned into me? And I said, I'm asking that question still today, and then Howard Balzer, he's on the Hall of Fame committee. He's a, radio guy in St. Louis, Sporting News. He's still around doing things. He was on that first, first telecast in 1980, and just talking about how, they didn't have any players. They didn't have any interviews. They're just kind of sitting around a table, kind of probably looked as amateurish as you and me sitting here talking. But that's not a knock against them. It's a knock against us. But just, where it was and what it is today, and now it's moving around the country like a big party. There is not a person that doesn't do a mock draft, I wouldn't think, that's in the social media, in all whatever quantifies media anymore. I was talking to Kuiper, and I was like, what's it like, Kuiper popularized it. I mean, he didn't invent it. Kuiper, was fascinating talking to him about, he was 18 years old and he was going to college in Baltimore, Essex Community College for broadcasting. And he was just loved football. And he started doing this in his parents' basement, and his dad invested $15,000, $20,000 into this business where he would put these books out. He'd sent for the first 2 years, he sent them out to the NFL teams. And the Colts were in Baltimore at the time. Ernie Accorsi kind of became his friend, as a little bit of a mentor. Had the Colts not moved to Indianapolis in 84, Kuiper probably would have went to work for the Colts. Maybe not as like an assistant GM, but as a consultant or some sort of person with Ernie, if Ernie was still there. But just to see where that, he was telling, Kuiper was, his first year, the sports centers, the draft, everything he did, he made $400 for the entire year. He's probably 500, 600,000, whatever it is, if not more now. So it is fascinating. And just when you think it can't get any bigger, it does. I mean, now it's, although I think it maybe it loses something by not being in New York City. But then again, you look at what the scenes you've seen in Philadelphia, Cleveland, some
It must pay off for the NFL to move it.
It'll be here eventually.
Because it goes to the local market and they get all the hype and all the merchandise and all the sales and everything. So it must be good for them to move it, or else they wouldn't do it, right?
Well, yeah, the NFL, there is no. And another thing, when I was talking to Joe Brown about, he goes, and you think of Pete Rose. Pete Rozelle is the best salesman that the league's ever had. I mean, he is in the Hall of Fame for a reason. A lot of commissioners are, but and he was caught, like I said, dumbfounded by this TV deal. And Joe said that Pete did have like a sense of there could be an oversight. And I've been saying this for years. It's like, what's the tipping point? Because the NFL is not going to sense it. They're going to keep going through. What is the tipping point on just how much people can take before it doesn't keep going up? And maybe nothing with gambling now, legalization of gambling, fantasy football, everything.
And then sending the teams overseas constantly.
Yeah. But Joe was saying that Pete did believe that there needed to be a rest period. The NFL needed a rest period. And I was laughing. I said, well, I wish Pete was alive today and back in charge. But because it does seem like it's too much. But, hey, I'm no longer the target audience anymore.
No, it's all about whatever the market commands. I think like this, the constantly sending teams over to Europe, and now down, I think Brazil's going to have a game or some dang thing, and on and on. And I think that's too much, but maybe they're just trying to expand their brand all over the world. So it doesn't seem like the sky's the limit for these guys. Speaking of mock drafts, Mark, it's time for now you and I to put forth a guess, prediction, speculation on what the Vikings might do on Thursday night. Did you do your mock this year? I didn't see that.
I think they're posting it at some point today.
Okay.
It's always a rough one to go back and look at a year later.
At least you admit that. Not many other people say, oh, yeah, I missed out of my 50 mocks I did. I missed out on 49.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and going back to Rick Goslin, nobody worked it harder. Even Joel Buxbaum, when he was doing it, Goslin, I think he said at one point he had 18, dead on, which is unheard of. I don't think anybody would get 18 now. And it used to be we would, years ago, everyone did one mock draft. I still do just one mock draft. It used to be, it's become multiple, obviously. People do it during the season or after the college season, and then they do it before free agency, after free agency, before the draft, blah, blah, blah. And then they start right away. There's 2025 going on right now, So you never did trades. You never predict. Now, if you do a straight mock draft,
yeah,
there's some media ones that I'm involved in, and they'll call and you'll take it, and you say, okay, give me this guy. Well, half the time there's probably going to be three trades made before you. So now this has been in probably in the last handful of years, 5 years, 6 years, where, if you don't project, if you don't do a projected trade guess, then it's like, well, where are the trades? Where are the trades? Right. So I do have a trade. I wrote my little topper to this, and it's like, if you're an old fogey that loves defensive football, you don't want to be reading my mock draft because of where the defensive guys go in the top half. They go basically nowhere.
So what do you got the Vikings doing?
I have them trading up with the Chargers because I do feel like, the Cardinals, if you're sitting there at four and you got all these picks, and I just I see Marvin Harrison in a different light because I watch him so much. I don't care that he didn't work out for people. He knows what it's like. Football's not going to be too big for him. He's probably the best talent in the draft. I don't think you back out of there and you come up and get the second or third best receiver. So I have them staying there. I could be, well, we could be wrong about everything.
Yeah.
But I have, you know, Caleb Williams and Daniels and May and Drake May going 1, 2, 3. I don't buy JJ McCarthy going to the Patriots at 3. But then I have the Chargers. The Chargers, you know, obviously they need a receiver. They need a tackle. Joe Alt, who I did a big story on him this morning, going to go to his draft party on Thursday night. He's staying local like a, like an offensive lineman from Minnesota should. You know, he's not going to go to the glitz and glamour.
And in college, though, Turkey.
So, you know, he's a left tackle. And I was talking to Alex Boone, who's training him out at TCO as part of the elite performance people. You don't draft a left tackle and put him on the right side. They already have an all-pro left tackle. So I think the Chargers, Jim Harbaugh wants a lineman, but he can trade down and get a right tackle somewhere at 11 probably. So I got him trading 11, 23, and a fourth round pick next year to move up to 5 to take McCarthy. I don't know why. I've seen where people went to go up to 5, they're given another 1.
Yeah.
That I don't think, you know, if you base it on, it's hard to look at the trade chart values when you're applying it to quarterbacks and the excitement that teams get when they're trying to get a quarterback. I mean, it seems like things go out the window, like, oh, well, just whatever it takes. But I don't think it is going to take another 1 to get to 5. I'll believe it when I see it.
I would love for that to happen. I, as you know, listening to me the last past few weeks, I'm just more concerned about them giving up too much because they have so many things they need to rebuild, and they can't keep giving away draft capital. I worry about Kwesi. By the same token, like I said, I saw what he did with Kirk. I think he has a number that he will go to. So ideally for me, it would be a trade up, you know, with number 5 because it might not cost as much, certainly, as a 4 or 3, trading up to 4 or 3. So I hope they do that, and I somehow hope Drake May falls there, but I don't think he will. So they end up getting McCarthy, and we go forward from there. I don't know if it'll happen.
Drake May scares. I sort of have a better feeling about McCarthy than I do Drake May. Again, not scudding it like a personnel guy for an NFL team, but his accuracy, he seemed something about him. It just, and the Vikings have talked about accuracy. I don't know. I just have a better feeling about McCarthy than I do Drake May. We'll see, you know. But
I should ask Jeff this: who puts more pressure on? When you're on the clock, the team that you're trying to trade up for is like all of a sudden Jim Harbaugh says, "Okay, I got you on the clock. I got you over a barrel. I want 3 first rounders for the 5th overall pick."
I think you have your parameters in place.
But you might not be agreed to it until
I think you have your, you know, you do talk to people. Hey, I don't think the first time you ever speak to someone is when it's on the clock. You get a sense of feeling and everything.
And that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that all of a sudden when the hammer's coming down, they can put the hammer to you.
Well, yeah, like a bait and switch, you're saying, right? Oh, yes. Wait a minute. It's sort of like Columbo when he'd come back for one more question. Right? but how about giving us another 1, you know?
Exactly. And, if, you know, he would be happy to do it to Minnesota since they didn't hire him as head coach, you know. So that's a little concerning, trading with old Jimmy Harbaugh. He's kind of a wild card in this whole thing, but ultimately I hope that's what happens. Anyway, we've gone way over, but it's because we had a great guest in Jeff Diamond. I always really appreciate him coming on and thank him for that. He's got great insights and we're setting us up for the draft real good on Thursday. Thanks Mark for all your insight, and thank you Mike Woldem for producing behind the scenes. Thanks Joe Johnson. And thanks to all the fans for checking us out this week. We will be back, of course, to recap the draft next week, so you won't want to miss that. But so come on back then, and we'll talk about it tomorrow some more. And until next time, skull. Skull, baby.
Skull.